Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 329. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about antebellum architecture, General Sherman, and the book In the Garden of Good and Evil, as we go to Savannah, Georgia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one, if you're looking for cheap travel between cities in the U.S., especially in the Eastern Seaboard, you may have one last option as several of the famous Chinatown bus companies have been shut down. If you're not familiar with these are companies that often operate from one Chinatown to another, and they were shut down in part because of safety hazards, because it was found the drivers were driving for too long a periods of time. This was a surprising story until you think about it. Did you know that you can't dress up as Tinkerbell and then go to Walt Disney World? One woman found that out the hard way as Disney asked her to change clothes. But if you think about it, I can understand it from Disney's point of view, because little kids coming up to her are going to think that she's an official character, and Disney has no control over the experience, and Disney is all about control. And then lastly, speaking of Disney and control, one Disney employee, or I should say ex-Disney employee and now jailbird, stole an iPhone from someone while they were on a Disney cruise line. How do we know that they did it, and how did they get caught? Because they didn't realize that the iPhone was still broadcasting all of the pictures they were taking of them and their friends to the internet via Apple's iCloud service. And so it wasn't very hard to figure out who that guy was in the picture, and that he has my phone. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Neil Christensen, who's come to talk to us about Savannah, Georgia. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here.
And Neil and I have had a chance to meet in unusual circumstances. We met at an Amateur Traveler meetup, and Neil was one of the people who joined us on the photo tour of Egypt. So I've gotten a chance to meet Neil and get to know both he and his wife well. So it's great to have you on the show. Why Savannah, Georgia? Why should we go there?
There's so many reasons to go to Savannah, Georgia. As I was getting ready to talk to you about this interview, I want to go back so much right now with all these reasons that I came up with. But things such as antebellum architecture, if you're into that, bed and breakfast, plenty of American history, nature, believe it or not, in Savannah, and the book, of course. Everybody goes because of the book.
And when you say the book, you mean?
I mean Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Okay. I thought that was the book you meant, but I was going to make you say it.
Well, when you're in Savannah, that is the term they use. They just say the book. They don't say Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. That's, everything is referred to there as the book.
Now, when were you there most recently?
I think my most recent trip was probably 2008. I've been there three times.
Okay. So I'm wondering if that's still quite as popular now, because it's a little later than the movie coming out, but it certainly has been one of the things that has helped re-put Savannah back on the map.
Yes, and that was the original reason we went, because we both read the book and really enjoyed the book and thought, well, that sounds like a cool place to go. And we were into Victorian architecture and antebellum architecture and that kind of thing, and thought, well, that sounds perfect for us. So that's how we ended up there.
And you say antebellum architecture. I'm not sure that everybody knows what you're talking about.
Antebellum would be pre-Civil War. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of history in Savannah from the 1800 to Civil War time frame.
Okay.
A lot of the Civil War took place in Savannah, big part of that. So there's a lot of history around the Civil War and just pre-Civil War in that area.
Okay. And what itinerary would you recommend for Savannah?
Well, I have a lot of different things that you can see and do in Savannah. I don't know if I have a specific itinerary, because one of the things I really like about Savannah is it's just really relaxed. It's just laid back, and I just like to get up every day and just, what are we going to do today? I don't go there with a really set plan of what to do. And that's what I kind of like about the city. It's just really casual and laid back, kind of artsy. Believe it or not, there is a big art influence there with SCAD, the Savannah College of Art and Design, being there. There's a lot of artists that come to the city, and it just makes it kind of a calm, relaxed, cool place to be.
Very cool. And then, of course, I'm not going to let you get away with that. As you know from listening to the show for 4 years, what would you recommend people do, though, when they finally
I've got a whole list.
Get off the couch and put down the mint julep?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We got plenty of those, too. Mostly, I'm going to talk about the Historic District, because that's where people are going to want to go and just hang out. It's a great, it's totally walkable city. And it has, by my count, 22 squares within the Historic District of Savannah. I won't swear to that, but it's right around that number.
And you mean city squares, parks?
Parks, yes.
Okay.
Built into the streets. It's a very well laid out and planned city. And it's got all these squares built into it that kind of the streets circle around. So as you come up the street, you dead end into a park, and you have to take a couple left-hand turns or right-hand turns to get around this park and then keep going on the street you were on. It just dead ends into a park. And there's 22 of these in the Historic District, and they're just really nice places to just hang out and people watch. Most of them have a fountain, a statue, some sort of historic significance in the middle and named after different things. So there's lots of those to explore. And within that is just many, many historic houses that are all open for tours that you can visit each day that are set up as they were in 18, whatever it was.
And when you go, do you stay in the Historic District?
Yeah, Jeanine and I are big bed and breakfast people.
Okay.
So it's a bed and breakfast heaven in Savannah. I've never been anywhere that has that many bed and breakfasts. So you have plenty to choose from there. We stay right in the Historic District. And I think two of the times I've been, we haven't even had a car. We just walk everywhere and don't have to deal with that whole car thing. So that's really nice.
And do you have a couple favorites of bed and breakfasts?
Well, I've stayed at three different ones over the year. My favorite was the Forsyth Park Inn, which is on, coincidentally enough, Forsyth Park. Forsyth Park is a giant, it's probably a six, maybe even an eight square city block park. It's a big park in Savannah, has some nice fountains there, some gardens, and the inn sits right across the street from the park. It's just one of my favorite places in Savannah to stay. It was just a really nice place to stay. Well taken care of there. Breakfast on the porch every morning overlooking the park. Just a really great place. The only negative to it is it's all the way on the south end of the Historic District. So you're kind of not in the middle of things, but it's still walkable.
Okay.
Yeah, another one we stayed at was the 1875 Inn, which was more centrally located. I like that one as well. Really nice innkeeper there that was really friendly, helpful, and it was nice and centrally located. So it was easy to get both north and south within the Historic District at that end.
And is that one perhaps built in 1875, or is that the address? Or
honestly, I can't remember. No, I'm guessing it was built previous to 1875, so I think it was the address.
Okay.
If I can remember, I couldn't tell you what street. I can't remember what street that one was on.
Okay. So you get up in the morning, it's your bed and breakfast, and if you were going to see one or two of the 22 different squares that was most representative, which one would you head for?
We came up with our two favorite squares out of the 22, and that would be Lafayette Square and Monterey Square. And we picked those just because they're for the more quiet squares. Some of them can get pretty busy with the traffic around them. Mm-hmm. Some of them aren't built as well for just sitting and hanging out. These are both really relaxed places that you can sit under big live oak trees with the Spanish moss draped over you in the shade and people watch. There's also good architecture on both of those squares, some nice older buildings. So there's lots to look at, lots to see, and just a nice place to just hang out and maybe eat some snacks and drink some sweet tea.
Okay.
One of the other things I would recommend, just to kind of get you oriented with the historic district, is to take a walking tour. And we took a walking tour at one point with Jonathan. He runs Architectural Tours of Savannah. He's a nice young guy that came down there to go to architecture school at Savannah College of Art and Design and just stayed. And now he does walking tours of the historic district. And that's a good way to just kind of get oriented, see a lot of the historic buildings, and maybe make a list of the ones you'd want to go back and go inside later. Because like I said, most of them, a lot of them are open as museums. And to see all of them just gets overwhelming. You forget after a half a day which house you've been in, why that house was different. There's just so many of them. So that's a good way to just go around and see all of them from the outside and then pick which ones you might want to go on a tour on the inside. And I had a couple that I picked out that we really liked that we went in, one of which was the Mercer House, mm-hmm. which is part of the Johnny Mercer family, although he never lived there. It was also famous in Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil as Jim Williams' house. He was one of the main characters in the book, and he lived in that house. And they've restored that house recently, and it was done really nicely, really well done inside. A lot of ties to Civil War history as well as to the book history. So you kind of got two for the price of one with that tour.
Interesting.
Another one we really liked was the Owens Thomas House. It was just really well done inside. And then a third one that I would pick out of all the ones, and there's lots of them in this historic district to tour, but the third one that I would pick out would be the Green Meldrum House. And that was really well done. It's an example of Gothic architecture. And it was used in the Civil War by Sherman as his headquarters. Chris, I know you're a history buff, so I'm doing this for your benefit. But in the Civil War, when the North invaded Savannah, they didn't want their city destroyed. So they gave the city to the army and basically said, you know, you can use my house as your headquarters so that things weren't destroyed. They'd seen other cities destroyed and they just kind of gave it up so that they wouldn't destroy the city. And so Sherman lived in this house when he took over Savannah. And this is the house that he sent a telegraph to Lincoln from that gave Lincoln the city of Savannah for Christmas. Mm-hmm. As his Christmas present in December of 1864. So that's a really nice house. That one's been really well done. It's now owned by a church.
And in case anybody else doesn't know what Neil's talking about, we're talking about 1864, the closing days of the Civil War. And Sherman has just marched to the sea, to Savannah from Atlanta. And much of this 50-mile-wide swath in between was burned to the ground, if not by Sherman's armies, by the bummers, the stragglers who were attached or hanging on or following after. So you could see why if you were in Savannah, you might be afraid that your town was going to be significantly damaged because, for one thing, they were a little mad by the time they got there. They held Savannah as one of those cities, one of those states that was fairly responsible for the rebellion. So,
see, I knew you'd know all that.
Oh, yeah.
I knew if I just set you up, you could go on with the Civil War history much better than I could.
So, yeah, I'm actually wondering how many of the buildings that are the antebellum architecture have been either rebuilt or significantly repaired after that whole period of time, because I know some of them were significantly damaged in that time period. But
yeah, but they've done a remarkable job with many of them, and especially the three that I listed there. Those are really well done. And some of them, you go in and there's just not that much inside. Mm-hmm. You do the tour and it's not that special. But these three are pretty special, done up with the nice woodwork and a lot of furniture and pieces from that time.
Okay. And let's stick with the history here for a second. Other historical things that we should see while we're there?
Janine and I are big cemetery buffs. We love the cemeteries. And Savannah has two of probably the world's best cemeteries if you wanted to visit. Really good examples of a Victorian cemetery. Bonaventure is the one that gets all the publicity in Savannah. It's also from the book. The cover of Midnight in Garden of Good and Evil has the bird girl on the cover, as people refer to her. And she was a statue from Bonaventure Cemetery, although she's not there anymore because too much publicity from the book. They had to move her. But that is an amazing cemetery that, oh, we spent easily half a day there wandering around, taking pictures. You know, in the Victorian times, they used the cemetery as a park. And it is a park. It is beautifully done up. It's plenty of the live oaks and Spanish moss and the ornateness of the markers is just amazing. And everybody tried to outdo each other, and one was grander than the next. And it just is an amazing thing to go through and see. And Bonaventure, that's a little bit of a ride from the historic district. We did it once by bus. It probably took us an hour to get there by city bus and then walking. And it was quite a ways. But if you have a car, it's probably a 15, 20 minute ride out of the historic district to the cemetery.
Okay.
And then the other cemetery in Savannah is Laurel Grove Cemetery. That's also a Victorian cemetery. It's a little closer in, a little easier to get to. You might be able to walk to that one maybe from the historic district. So that one's a little simpler to get to. Again, a great example of a Victorian era cemetery with tons of ornate markers and statues. It's also got in it a Confederate cemetery within the cemetery, which is very interesting. We were there once when it was all done up with flags, and it was very interesting to see. So, yeah, there's a lot of history in Savannah, a lot of different things to see on the historic side.
Now, I'm gathering that you're not going there like one would go to, say, the Granary Cemetery in Boston, looking for particular graves of famous people.
No, there's many famous people in both of those cemeteries, but famous to Savannans or Georgians, not to you and I in general. Probably the only person you're going to know in either one of those is Johnny Mercer is buried in Bonaventure. And probably a lot of people don't even know who Johnny Mercer is anymore.
And I'm going to say that I have to fit in that crowd. I'm drawing a blank.
You don't. Johnny Mercer is a songwriter and singer from, when was his heyday? Probably the 40s, 50s. Moon River.
Okay.
Would be his song. So, yeah, he's buried there. And he's kind of the city's claim to fame, Johnny Mercer is.
No, when I play Trivial Pursuit, somebody else on the team has to help us get the music wedge.
Oh, okay. You're handling Civil War history.
I'll take the history, I'll take the science, but somebody else has to get the music wedge. So.
All right, I'll help you out with the music side next time. There's plenty to do with history. I could go on and on with history, but like I said, it starts to get a little repetitive. Each house looks like the next house. Mm-hmm. But there are other things to do besides just the history. Like I said before, there's a lot of art in Savannah because of the school. And the school is just a great place to go and see as well. It's built in a lot of historic buildings. Actually, SCAD is probably the biggest single landholder in the historic district. They just keep buying up house after house and turning it into offices and dormitories and things. So they own a big chunk of the historic district. But they have a lot of galleries that the students do there that you can tour through. And then, like I said, they just influence the surrounding area because people come to school there and then just stay. And so a lot of art ends up there. So there's a lot of art galleries in the historic district, as well as in the market center, which is part of the historic district. It's on the edge, but there is a kind of a more retail area where there's a lot of shops and restaurants, and there's some art galleries over there as well. So there's lots of art to see.
Okay.
If you get bored with your history.
Well, and I was going to say, for people who are not history buffs, and I understand there are a few.
Yeah, you probably hear from them once in a while. Yeah.
Occasionally, especially the one I live with. But what other things would you recommend for them?
Well, like I said, there's the art. But in addition to that, we have some good shopping, antiquing. I don't know if that still falls in the history genre. But
we're sliding a little different there. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of antique shopping. There's a lot of shops, antique shops sprinkled throughout the historic district. And then believe it or not, I said at the beginning, nature. So there are some nature things you can do in and around Savannah. Just the amount of flowers that are part of all these squares that I talk about and the trees and the planning they did for these, the central planning that they must have put into laying all this out. It's just the landscaping of all this is pretty amazing. So if you're into that sort of thing, there's plenty to see there. But one of the favorite things I've ever done in Savannah was we did a drive through the Savannah National Wildlife Refuge.
Oh, interesting.
Which is just across the river from the city. It's probably only 15, 20 minutes from the historic district. You would need a car to get over there, and you definitely want a car because this is not some place you want to walk around. Because I think on the day Janine and I were there, we counted, it was pushing 25 alligators we saw as we went through. Some of them absolutely humongous. It was just amazing, all out laying, sunning themselves. I would not want to be out walking around. As well as we saw some pretty good-sized snakes hanging in the trees. So that is a thing that you basically drive through. It's a lot of canals, kind of a swampy area, and you can drive through that. It probably took us an hour, hour and a half to drive through it. And that was just seriously amazing to see that many alligators in the wild just all roaming around doing their thing.
Hmm.
So that was something that I would definitely recommend. You can also do, they have dolphin tours, believe it or not. You don't really think of dolphins when you think of Savannah?
I do not.
No, you didn't, did you? But the Savannah is right on the river, the
sure.
Savannah River. Runs right through the historic district on the edge. And they have dolphin tours that take off right from there that will take you out to the intercoastal. And you cruise the intercoastal for a couple hours. And the day we went, not a great dolphin sighting day, but I think we saw a couple dolphins that day. But it was just a nice boat ride out through some pretty desolate areas. Another thing you really wouldn't think of when you think of Savannah.
And just so that I can verify my assumptions, you mentioned the river, but the dolphins aren't in the river. They're out in the seawater, I'm assuming.
Correct. They kind of come into the intercoastal waterway a little bit there.
Got it. Okay.
And so, yeah, you have to get out a ways. You have to go down the river out towards the Atlantic before you start finding dolphins. But it's not that far of a ride before you're out to where they'll be. And I think they said they even do find them occasionally lost in the river. You know, they start making their way where they don't really belong.
Hmm.
But traditionally, you got to get out a little further to find them.
Well, and we didn't actually put Savannah on a map, but you've started to do it a little bit here. You mentioned it's on the river. That's the river that is the border between South Carolina and Georgia. So we're way up at the northern end of the Georgian coast here. So we're just a few miles from the coast here in Savannah.
Yes. Yeah, you're not that far from the coast. As a matter of fact, one of the other things you can do is kind of a day trip from Savannah is to go out to Tybee Island, which is where a lot of the locals hang out in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Tybee Island would be out on the Atlantic. And it's mainly just a lot of beaches, a couple lighthouses to see, and probably my favorite restaurant ever would be out on Tybee Island. So there's a lot of things to do out there as well for a day trip. But that's more of a summertime thing.
Okay, Neil, don't leave me hanging. Your favorite restaurant ever is on Tybee Island.
Oh, we have to talk about food? I know, the amateur traveler, we have to hit the food. My favorite restaurant ever, this place was so cool, is called the Crab Shack, believe it or not.
Okay.
Which does not sound that appetizing. But my favorite food is low country boil. I love a good low country boil, and this had the best one I've ever had. It's a little hard to find. It's out in the middle of nowhere on this island. You get there and think, this is a restaurant, huh? And it's, again, out front, they've got alligators here as you come in. They're caged this time, so you're going to be all right. But you sit at a table, big round table, that has a hole in the middle of it. And underneath the hole is a giant garbage can where you put all the scraps from your food that they bring you on a giant garbage can lid. So it's an upside down garbage can lid they bring you filled with, oh, what was on that thing? We had shrimp, crawfish, potatoes, corn. What else is there? Lobster, other kinds of fish. Just an amazing menagerie of things they bring you on this giant upside down garbage can lid that they sit in the middle of the table. And you eat off of, and then just shove your scraps through the hole in the middle of the table.
And when you say low country boil, this is a term that I have not heard before. Boil because we're talking about food that is boiled. You're boiling the crab and the lobsters and the corn.
Correct. Yep.
Low country.
Low country is what they refer to as, and now you're getting out of my expertise a little bit here, but that whole South Carolina, it's more of a South Carolina and North Carolina thing, I think, that the low country, as you're getting down towards the ocean, I believe is where they came up with low country.
The tidewater. Okay.
Yeah. So you'll find this all up and down the southern east coast, this type of food. And it's just amazing. They put spices in there. I couldn't tell you exactly what spices they boil with this, but there's a spice bag they'll put in with all this when they boil it. And it's just some amazing food. And that place had the best low country boil I've ever had. And I can't wait to go. That was the last thing I did last time I was there. Somebody recommended it to us. We drove out there, ate, and then drove straight to the airport and came home. And I need to go back.
Well, and you were talking about side trips. The name of the airport actually gives us a little hint at one other side trip that people do from Savannah.
And you've got me. I don't remember the name of the airport.
It's the Savannah Hilton Head International Airport.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah, you're not that far from Hilton Head.
Which is obviously over the border there into South Carolina, but obviously a lot of people who want to do just the beach sort of vacation will go to Hilton Head. So it is something that would be easily combinable with Savannah, obviously.
Yeah, and I've done Savannah with Charleston before. Mm-hmm. I've done Savannah going the other way with St. Simons Island and Jekyll Island. Those are on the southern end of Georgia, right getting down to the Florida border.
Okay.
You're pretty close there. And those are some other islands, kind of historic. Jekyll Island is another historic island with a lot of old buildings and homes on it. and St. Simon's Island. We go to Little St. Simon's Island, which is a wildlife refuge. It's a private 10,000 acre island, I believe it is, and where at any one time there's only 30 people on the island. Hmm. And there's wild alligators roaming around and deer, and it's just a whole zoo that you can walk through. It's an amazing place, Little St. Simon's Island. So that's another place I can combine with Savannah, and we have in the past.
Excellent. And that would be obviously more on a driving trip probably that you did that.
Yeah, that's probably 2 hours from Savannah, two or 3 hours.
So not a bad drive from there.
Not a horrible drive, but yeah, you would definitely need a car for that.
And I interrupted you while you were in the middle of food. Are there other things that we should note in terms of Savannah? And if you're there, you should try. I mean, you mentioned the sweet tea.
Sweet tea, definitely. You know, Savannah, it's got some of that low country food you can find there. A little bit of soul food, a lot of just comfort food, your fried chicken, your collard greens, that type of thing. So there is a variety of food there. Unfortunately, I love just about every variety they have. Combine that with sweet tea and I'm in heaven. I'm from Chicago, but I was born in the wrong place. I should have been born in the South because I love all that food down there.
Now, what time do you usually go down there? I mean, if you're in there in the summertime, you're going to need a lot of sweet tea.
You're going to need, oh, yeah, you are. I have never been there in the summer. I've stayed away from it because everybody tells me don't go there in the summer. So we always go there in the spring. I think I've always been there in March or April.
Okay. And so March, we're talking about average temperatures of 70, April about 80, mid-80s. August, it looks like about 90.
Yeah.
That's probably the humidity as well. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, you haven't talked about the humidity, which when you get into the summer, it's going to be pretty miserable down there.
Yeah, we're kind of close to swampland there.
Oh, you are in swampland, yeah. Yeah, in the city itself, you're not, but yeah, you're only minutes away from it all around you. So yeah, it gets pretty humid there. That's why they have so much Spanish moss. It loves that humidity in the air. Yep.
And I am not aware of the history of Savannah, but I sort of get the impression from where it's situated that they kind of moved just far enough inland to get away from probably the malaria mosquitoes at the time and built Savannah so that it still was, you know, close to the water so that it could have shipping and such, but not quite in the swamp.
Yeah, I believe that's how it works. And as you look at a lot of the historic houses, they were all built to take advantage of the breezes that were coming in off the ocean. So there's still breezes coming in that far. Mm-hmm. But it's still, like you said, 90 degrees and 100% humidity in the summer. So it's pretty warm there.
Okay. Before we start to wrap it up, I know that you're an amateur photographer. As I mentioned, you and I have both been on a photography tour with Ralph Velasco, who's been a guest on the show a couple times. In fact, I think you're going back with Ralph to a Danube River cruise.
Yes.
Favorite place to take pictures in Savannah?
Oh, Bonaventure Cemetery.
Okay.
Hands down. Or Laurel Grove, either one. Things you just never see anywhere else, you're going to find there. Just some amazing, amazing statuary out there. And you just combine it with all the live oak trees and the Spanish moss and the river in the background. Yeah, it's got to be Bonaventure.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was going to be that, the alligators or some of the gardens you'd mentioned, but I figured we were in that kind of ballpark.
Yep. Yep, you pegged me.
Anything else that people should know before they head down to Savannah?
I think they just need to know to bring some walking shoes. Like I said, it's a very walkable city, but it is spread out. You're going to do a lot of walking. I put a lot of miles on when I go to Savannah. They do have a free shuttle bus that will take you around the historic district at certain times of the year. I don't think it runs all year long, but every time I've been there, it's been running. So you can hop on that to get around a little bit as well. But you are going to do a lot of walking when you're in Savannah.
Okay. And what's one thing the guidebooks would recommend that you would say, skip it?
I would have to go against conventional wisdom here, and because everybody in Savannah will tell you to go there, and that is Lady and Sons Restaurant. It is very popular, lines down the street every night, and I would say skip it. Not worth the time. Food isn't that great, and the atmosphere definitely not that exciting. And I haven't met anybody that went there yet that really liked it.
Hmm.
But it is the touristy thing to do when you're in Savannah. You got to get a reservation. You got to get in line. Everybody wants to do it, but I would say definitely skip it.
So skip it and do what? Go around the corner and go to?
Oh, there are much better restaurants to select from just in that historic district. Probably my favorite one would be the Old Pink House.
Okay.
And because it's a old pink house that's been turned into a restaurant, and really good food, great atmosphere there. Prices maybe a little bit more than Lady and Sons, but a much better experience and much better food. So that would be one that I would recommend.
Southern comfort food.
Yeah, it's still going to be along that vein of comfort food, seafood. Lady and Sons is very much comfort food. Fried chicken is their big claim to fame, I think, but I didn't like it, and I haven't met anybody that has. So I would definitely say skip that and find one of a lot of restaurants to choose from. And Old Pink House would be one I would recommend. Or Mansion on Forsyth Park is another really good restaurant, although that's a little bit higher end even.
All right. Final two questions. You know what they are?
Yes.
You really know you're in Savannah when what?
Oh, when you're drinking a sweet tea, you're sitting under some Spanish moss in a square, and you're doing a lot of people watching.
Okay. And if you had to summarize Savannah in three words, what three words would you use?
Well, we got to go with history. Because there's just, you can't escape it. Relaxed, because that's what I just love about that place. It's just laid back. It's the South. Nobody's in a hurry. And colorful. It's colorful from the flowers, the architecture, and just the culture. There's a lot of variety there that I just don't see in my normal world.
Okay. And just thinking about a northerner heading down to the relaxed there, you're from Chicago area.
Yes.
Where people talk a little faster. Things move a little faster.
Yes.
Always enjoyed the relaxed pace down there because you're born out of place, or does it sometimes things move a little slower than you're used to?
No, I pretty much always enjoy that. It's a mind shift. You know, when you go there and you get off the plane, you have to take it out of third gear and put it into first because nobody's going to be in a hurry. But it's not as bad as other places I've been in the country, other versions of the South, where things just stand still. Savannah moves slow. It doesn't stand still. So I can do that. But as an uptight northerner, yeah, I got to slow down a little bit when I get there.
Excellent.
And that's what I like about it.
Well, Neil, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us some about your soon-to-be-adopted hometown of Savannah, Georgia, it sounds like.
Thank you.
In news of the community this week, I heard from Rebecca, who's going through some of the older episodes and found Travel to the Philippines, episode 201, and commented, I traveled to the Philippines in 2009. It was my first real outside of the U.S. trip. I don't count traveling literally 30 minutes into Canada from Montana. Anyway, it was a great trip. I found the Filipino people to be friendly and happy people. One morning, I woke up early and just sat on a chair in the house where I was staying. I could hear a man singing in the driveway, a radio playing down the street, and eventually I heard the street vendors as they sang about their wares. It was beautiful. I realized that while the material differences may seem great, the Filipino people have found something in life that many Americans miss: happiness. Also, Ivan indicated that you can break the ice with locals by playing basketball. You can also break the ice by just striking up a conversation or by singing. They love karaoke. I attended many karaoke parties while I was there. I love that they clap for everyone, no matter how talented or skilled they are. Thanks so much, Rebecca. And then we heard from Kim commenting on the episode 300 on the province of Quebec. I wanted to congratulate you on a podcast episode about the province of Quebec. Indeed, as a Montrealer, let me just express my excitement that you covered us at all. Of course, your guest covered more touristy areas, which is to be expected. And indeed, Pac from Montreal, who left a comment on your website, does mention more interesting local insights. No matter, attractions aside, most fascinating is how accurately Mr. Bernstein captured, in a nutshell, much of the spirit of Quebec, its history, as well as the differences between the cities of Montreal and Quebec. Mr. Bernstein's understanding of language issues, the duality of French and English, the ability of many to switch seamlessly from one to the other, the complex felt by monolingual francophones, not to mention the place held by hockey in our life, the significance of hockey figures, Beliveau versus Richard, our losing hockey team in the last 30 years, the rise of soccer in Montreal due to our multi-ethnicity, the dual Jewish community in Montreal, down to the bad quality of our wines compensated by our fine beers. Though this podcast is not exactly comprehensive, and there is plenty more to say, I did feel, as a Montrealer, the gentleman's grasp of much of Montreal's cultural reality, especially the history and language issues. It's great that your guest appreciates the province In return, we are grateful for his visit, his time, and his curiosity. Thank you for your great work. I'm a fan of your podcast, and listening to it is a must whenever travel planning. Kindest regards, Kim from Montreal. Kim, thanks so much. I always breathe just a little bit of a sigh of relief when I read a letter like yours that says we got it right, or at least we got it right enough. And as we all know, we're always telling a story through a particular point of view. But thanks so much for the encouraging words of feedback. On that high note, we will end the Amateur Traveler this week. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email as Kim did, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode so others can share it at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. If you happen to be in iTunes and happen to give a 5-star review for the show, we love that. I will be speaking next week at TBEX, the Travel Blog Exchange Conference. I do not know if there will be a show coming out next week, as I will be pretty darn busy. But if not, we'll see you the week after, and thanks so much for listening.